Do you have a plan for the day after the war?
Absolutely. I think the day after the war, it's first of all the day after Hamas. You have to destroy Hamas, otherwise Gazans don't have a future, peace doesn't have a future, the expansion of peace doesn't have a future. So get rid of Hamas, that's our goal, number one. Number two, demilitarize Gaza, and the one sustained demilitarization I think requires that Israel have the overall responsibility to fight resurgent terrorists. Three, ensure that Gaza or seek a civilian administration by Gazans who are not affiliated with Hamas, and also don't seek the destruction of Israel. And the last thing is rebuild Gaza in a peaceful way using the support of moderate Arab states and the international community. That's a realistic plan. That's the one I have. But it goes through victory. There is peace and stability and prosperity only through victory. The road to peace goes through victory over Hamas.
Mr. Prime Minister, thanks for your time.
Well, that was I don't think Stephanopoulos knew quite what to say there. Welcome to the program. That was him talking to Benjamin Netanyahu, and this was all about the whole the International Criminal Court, which we're going to talk a little bit more about today. That news came out yesterday, and it's such a joke. It's such a joke, especially, and I mentioned this yesterday, when you have two of these, the entities that are involved in there, they're not even, signatories to the agreement that establishes the scope of the ICC's jurisdiction, if you want to believe that they have any, that is. So welcome to the program. Dana Loesch with you. We are at the top of our first hour this Tuesday and going to bring you all the latest. We're in one of those weird news periods where your post-college graduations or everyone's graduating and you're getting ready to gear up to like a crazy election and everybody's just kind of like holding steady because it's going to get, you guys are going to be really, really, really regretting as we roll into fall because it's going to be nuts, the election season. You know how this works. Y'all are used to it. But we're going to keep you up to date with everything that's been happening thus far. So it's good to be with you. So like I said, welcome to the program. You can listen coast to coast all around the country. And if you're not listening all around the country as well, you can also stream the radio program. Watch the simulcast of it. That's the video component because, it's a radio program. We've got the video component as well. So you can watch that channel 347 DirecTV. You can also check us out on X and Rumble and Facebook and YouTube and all that good stuff. All right. So the International Criminal Court, we were talking a little bit about this. This, a 1-2 punch. The same day, you have the ICC that does this dumb thing. And at least the Biden administration came back and pushed against it. But the weird thing is that they also, the Biden administration, they had that weird, we want to issue condolences as though the Iranian people were mourning that Ibrahim Raisi, the guy who's the president of Iran, the butcher of Tehran, who is going to be the supreme leader at some point. And it's just kind of a mess. We talked about that yesterday with Stephen Yates. It hasn't improved. It was just sort of all over the place. But at least I will say that the administration has pushed back on this ICC nonsense. Although you've empowered them, though. I mean, they've empowered them. So I'm not quite sure how much they can actually push back on all of this because they've established the legitimacy and their ability to claim this and act as though they have influence by entertaining their claims to jurisdiction and scope and influence. And so I don't know if you guys knew this, George Clooney's wife is one of the, I'm pulling the story up, one of the attorneys that's involved with the ICC case with regards to looking into issuing warrants for Netanyahu, right? She's involved in this case. And I was reading a little bit about this because she's like a junior barrister and she's like a human rights attorney. But a couple of my attorney friends who work in international law apparently are very snotty. And they were saying that, including one of them that every now and then writes over at Substack, Chapter and Verse, was saying that she's still a junior barrister after all of this time, like a junior partner after all of this time. And nothing's changed. So they were saying that she's a show pony who just takes these high profile cases as a way to preen and that she's a celebrity's wife first and foremost. And that's really where she makes her bank, which kind of makes sense because she's involved with these like weird cases like the Elgin Marbles and all this stuff. And for her to get involved in this case, and then the comments that she said after to defend it are just stupid. So people were saying, some of the people in the attorney friends that I have were saying that she's nothing but a show pony who takes these, and she's a junior partner. She's like a junior on this case. She's not even a senior on this case. And that she takes these, she's on these cases, and that she doesn't really do a heck of a lot. And that's kind of it. I mean, she's a celebrity's wife. She's George Clooney's wife. And that's, she really doesn't have to do anything else. I thought that was kind of interesting. So I don't know, you know, if that changes anything, but I do know that Joe Biden's going to be having a fundraiser with all of the Hollywood set that includes George Clooney, like next month. They're having this big giant fundraiser, and his statements came back. I mean, they said it was a stupid thing, that they don't recognize it, which they shouldn't, because the International Criminal Court is just a clown car. Nobody cares, right? Nobody, it doesn't have any influence over here. You wouldn't recognize any of these people if they knocked on your door, would you? Would you recognize the ICC? You wouldn't recognize this clown. And I don't really, I don't incorporate the international legal musings of people like Amal Clooney into how I view our allies in the Middle East. And there's nothing that they can do that has any kind of effect here on how we approach law and foreign policy in the United States. And I just think I'm not going to also consider, now this, again, I'm not going to name names because they actually practice law, but a friend of mine who was saying that they don't take into consideration a 46, 47-year-old junior partner who has never been like lead on a case. So I don't know what that's the catty stuff from the attorney sect, and all the attorneys out there, I think, would probably agree with that. Anyway, that being said, I just think that's at least they stood up to it. But what is that going to do? It puts Biden in a weird position, because remember, he's trying to make Dearbornistan happy. And it does put him in a little bit of a weird position, because you have these moves with the ICC. He's pushed against it. They were trying to, in some way, equalize Netanyahu with Hamas's leaders, which would be like trying to equalize Roosevelt or Truman with Hitler and say, you both are committing war crimes, stop this. Or Hirohito, you both are committing war crimes, stop this. I mean, it's just nonsense the way that they approached it. I hope that they are ridiculed out of existence. They ought to be. But it puts him in a weird position, because now he goes from he's gone from demanding or applauding a ceasefire when he was speaking at Morehouse College over the weekend, applauding a ceasefire, and then now blasting the ICC for their position on this. So it has them all over the place, because they've tried to focus group their foreign policy. They're inconsistent, and there's you can't make sense of it, because they've been trying to make all of these, their little subsects of their Democrat base happy. And when you're doing that, instead of just going on consistency, you get this kind of a mess. I mean, for crying out loud, they've been doing that pier that they've had. The floaty pier, by the way, did you hear about this? No, you didn't. So you guys know that, you remember, the administration has been, they built this pier, right? They built this pier. It's off the couple miles out the coast of Gaza, and they were going to give taxpayer funded aid to Gazans, the people that voted for Hamas, and Hamas began attacking the pier, and Gazans began attacking the pier. And I thought that was an interesting way to report it by the foreign press, because they didn't just say that it was Hamas that did it. They were saying that it was Gazans that were doing it, because when you see civilians and all the video after October 7th cheering when they had all of these hostages that they brought in from Israel, and you saw civilians out there spitting on them and civilians out there kicking them. I mean, I couldn't see the difference between the civilians and the Hamas members at that point, because there were so many people in the streets screaming, including women. It was pretty amazing. But they had Gazans that were attacking them as well. And so obviously the aid workers, it's not the safest place in the world. And the aid is apparently going through the section of Gaza where the IDF is not going through. So the IDF is not there clearing anything out when the aid is coming through. But that hasn't stopped Hamas and other Gazans from apparently attacking aid workers. I don't know. So apparently the New York Times said that the Gazans have been looting aid trucks and blaming Israelis for it. Not a story that I thought I would be seeing today, but it is the New York Times that reported it. You know, I always am very hesitant, but apparently, and they've got photo and video, they've been investigating this, and they have been, they said some of the first aid shipments that have been arriving through that pier were looted immediately. And it wasn't Hamas, it was just Gazans that came in. They intercepted a convoy of trucks that had loaded goods from the pier, grabbing them, running off with the contents. You know, do you remember a lot of the previous aid that had been sent that was confiscated and taken by Hamas and Gazans? They started reselling it. And so people have been saying the United Nations, and this is one of the justifications for the ICC's demand for a warrant, because they've said that Israel's been starving people and blocking aid. Israel hasn't been blocking aid. Israel's literally not even in the area where the aid is coming through. They're not blocking any aid. They're not there. And the aid that has been looted is now, as the New York Times, you know, that bastion of conservatism, is now popping up for sale on the black market. And so this isn't the first, second, third, fourth, fifth time this has happened. And they said that people have been reporting this. Some of the journalists have been reporting this anonymously because they're just outraged. But they said that the United Nations, the ICC had cited starvation as one of the bases for the demand for a warrant for war crimes for Israel, for Netanyahu and the defense minister. But yet they've delivered aid, and now the U.S. is delivering aid. Nobody's blocking the aid except for the Gazans, not even Hamas, but the Gazans that have been stopping, intercepting trucks and looting. So aid is getting into Gaza, apparently, and it has nobody from Israel has stopped it. The United States has delivered it, but the international community, including the ICC that Amal Clooney is working with, they're claiming that it's Israel that's starving Gazans, when it's Gazans starving Gazans. You know, it's probably pretty easy to investigate what's happening in Gaza from your super bougie mansion in the UK, or maybe from your super bougie lakeside mansion at Lake Como in Italy, or maybe your super bougie mansion in Los Angeles. I don't know. Do you even have to really be a human rights lawyer as a 40-something-year-old junior partner that's never gone beyond? I don't know. I'm just like citing my lawyer friends again. They know more about this than I do. But I'm just saying, it's really easy to investigate this when you're not down there doing the investigating and you're just taking the word at gospel truth of whatever Hamas tells you. Fascinating. So we're going to talk more about this. We're also going to jump into some of the, we got some 2024. I don't know if you guys have seen this. I saw this video and I thought this describes like so many things right now. Did you guys see the lady on the flight? I think it was a Frontier flight. She was in the emergency row exit and they were asking her if, you know, what they always ask you, can you help and assist other passengers? She said no, and it turned into a big deal. Everybody had to deplane. It's crazy. We're going to talk about that. We got the latest on crime stats. We have a whole bunch of stuff still to get into as we barrel towards our headlines segment as we move. So there's a company that I just started using called Ammo Squared, and Ammo Squared helps you stay stocked up on ammunition, like automatically. It's a truly automated system. You set it and you forget it. It's an ammo purchasing program, and you can pick whatever caliber you want. You can set your budget, you can select your shipping, and that's it. And the cool thing is that it builds up, your ammunition builds up over time, and it's stored in this climate controlled warehouse, and it sends it automatically when you want it, when you have it selected to send. And ammunition is a hard asset. I mean, it's something that's tangible. I think we all remember the uncertainty, like back in 2019, 2020, when there were certain calibers that were kind of hard to find. And we were calling some of our retail friends and saying, when do you get a shipment of this? Can we get some? Can we lay claim to some when it comes in? And in times of uncertainty and inflation, the value of all this stuff only goes up. So Ammo Squared is there to help smooth out the rough spots of ammunition availability. It's like an ammo 401k or something like that. You set it up, you have ammo for that rainy day when store shelves are empty and ammo's hard to find. So you can learn more and you can sign up today at ammosquared.com and ensure that you're prepared for whatever may come your way. That's ammosquared.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So I don't know what to make of this one. Newsweek says Tucker Carlson has launched, which he has, launched a show on Russian state TV. It's on Russia 24. Apparently, the Russian state newspaper Rossiya Gazeta reported that the first episode is now available online. They said it's part of a joint project with his own TV production company. And they said that they're going to feature news figures and politicians who have alternative views to the mainstream. Now, as you know, the state that's reporting this and Russia 24, all of the stuff does go through the Kremlin. So I'm just going to set that on the table. It's weird, and I don't know what to make of that, guys. It's weird. All right, so Scottie Scheffler's his arraignment in Kentucky has been delayed. You guys remember this story? We've been talking about it. It was postponed till next month despite objection from the county attorney. The top-ranked golfer in the world was originally scheduled to be arraigned today at 9. It's been rescheduled for June 3rd, so that is ongoing fallout from all that. Scarlett Johansson is mad because apparently she told OpenAI not to use her voice, and she says that they've done anyway. They did it anyway. I've been hearing this more and more, and there are a lot of people that are redoing their contracts. When I was redoing my contract, I had to include all this stuff for AI and all this in there. It's very interesting, though, and how behind a lot of the studios are in safeguarding their talent from this, too. Target is cutting prices on 5,000 items. It's apparently a price cut war with Walmart. They said that, at least that's how it started. They said it's going everything from butter to laundry detergent. They're trying to attract inflation-wary shoppers who are turned off by high prices. Now, this actually may work for them very well. I don't think it's going to be like Red Lobster with all-you-can-eat shrimp. I don't think it's going to bankrupt them because it looks like they're doing it on some smart stuff, but we'll see. We got a lot more on the way, including peak America right now. I'll explain. Gold Co. Precious Metals. The world's unstable, and you want to diversify and protect your savings, and you can do so with precious metals like gold and silver through Gold Co. You don't want to have to wait around to find out how bad it can get. Gold Co. can help you, and you can have a hedge against inflation. Protect your wealth. They have a free 2024 wealth protection kit, and you can learn how to possibly get $10,000 in bonus silver as a listener of this program. They've helped people like you and me place over $2.5 billion in gold and silver, and they have a very unique education first approach. So they give you this one of a kind wealth protection kit. It explains the economy and how gold IRAs work. They want to make it easy for you to get the benefit of owning physical gold or silver. And this is a very important part of your overall retirement and savings strategy. They're very forthright, no pressure. They've got thousands of five-star reviews. You don't have anything to lose. Get started today at danalikesgold.com and get your free gold kit from Gold Co. and learn how to get $10,000 in bonus silver and get your complimentary wealth protection kit. Visit danalikesgold.com.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
So, welcome back to the program. This song is so perfect for what we're getting ready to discuss. Dana Lashier with you, bottom of this first hour. So, how many times y'all, like, you know, you get on an airplane and everybody always wants to get that extra legroom. They like that exit row legroom, right? And you're always asked, when you sit in the exit row, like, how do they say it? Are you able and willing to assist other passengers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? I have never, in all of my years of flying, I've never met anyone who's like, no, I'm only going to do me, right? Even if you don't mean it, you say it. I'm not saying that anybody, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, you say it. You're like, yeah, whatever. So that is apparently not what happened in North Carolina at the Charlotte Douglas International Airport. So this was a Frontier Airlines, and there was a passenger that was in the exit row, right? And they ask you, are you ready and willing to comply with exit row instructions, blah, 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 blah. So she gets on the seat. And by the way, can I just point out that when you get on a plane, you know how, like, when you get on a plane and you haven't even made it to the jet bridge yet, you go into where they're checking your ticket and they scan your pass or your phone or whatever, and they're like, you're sitting in the exit row, are you willing and able? You have to say yes then before you get on the plane. So they ask you at two different points if you're ready and willing and able to comply. I've never not had that happen, and I've flown multiple airlines. So this lady gets on the plane, and she gets into the exit row. And then, of course, you know, you have the flight attendant that asks, the same question that you're always asked. Are you ready and willing, etc.? This woman did not answer the way that everyone else did. And it resulted in the entire plane having to be deboarded while she was arrested. Watch if you're watching the simulcast and or listen if you're streaming the radio program to this. She's upset. She don't want to comply. This other lady is begging her to go. The whole plane is saying, please get off. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. She chose violence today. And then the police come. Oh my gosh. The whole plane is begging her. Please, woman, please get off the plane. They're begging her. She ain't having it. And they all have to deplane. They all have to get off that flight. They all have to get off that flight because she's getting arrested. Now, what led up to this? You might be wondering. This is what led up to it. They said that she immediately got on the plane because, again, remember, when you go through the ticketing part, when you're getting on the plane, they're like, hey, are you ready and willing? Blah, blah, blah. You say yes. Then you're allowed to get on the jet bridge and you go get on the plane. Apparently, right when the attendant came up to her, when they do that last check and they're saying, are you ready and willing? She said, according to all of the people all around her on the plane, oh, I'm not going to save anybody. If something happens, I'm going to save myself. One of the other ladies on the plane said this was her attitude through the whole process, and I knew something was going to pop off. That's what one of the other women sitting next to her was saying this. And so she said that the flight attendant asked her again because she was apparently shocked. Like, ma'am, are you going to... And the woman said, quote, get out of my damn face, and then proceeded to open up her snack. Oh, my gosh. And then she just wouldn't stop. She said, you better get out of my face is what you need to do, Betty. Oh, boy. So it turned into a whole thing. She said she was flying to take care of her grandson while her mother was on vacation. She goes, my grandson's getting out of school and his mama took a flight to Mexico and I'm not getting off this plane. Well, you are, because you decided to have a fit on the flight. So all of this had to do, and I'm the numerous reporting on this, all of this had to do with a woman who did not, she wanted to sit in the exit row, but she did not want to do what the exit row required. And she could have switched seats, she could have done, and instead she ended up getting arrested because she got belligerent and got into verbal altercations with various flight crew members as well as other passengers. The entirety of the plane was begging her to get off the flight. People were even trying to get her to switch seats and she wasn't having it. She was there just to raise hell. What do you do with those people? They are not there to solve a problem. They are there to be a problem. They are there to ruin your day. And they had to deplane. They had to get everybody off the plane. There are people who are missing their connections. You are asked before you get on the plane, and then you are asked before takeoff. And someone said, well, is it possible that she didn't understand the instructions? And the witnesses were going, no, because everybody's on their phones. They're like, no, because her attitude was so bad. You knew she understood. She just didn't want to go along with it. Wow. And they, she got mad because they were trying to get her to verbalize her answer, because that's required by law. It's not the attendant's job. You know, the attendant did not make up the law that you had to get a verbal answer. If you don't want to sit in the exit row, don't sit in the exit row. Do you find yourself like wincing whenever you get on a plane anymore because you don't know what you're going to find? I feel like this is peak America sometimes. Not peak America, but peak human culture, peak human nature. Selfish, bratty people who only care about themselves and getting theirs. That's what it feels like. If I'm in an exit row, I don't have a problem because I also know that I'm going to definitely be getting off a bad flight if something happens and I'm in the exit row because I get to control that door. That's a power seat. Why would you not want to be in a power seat? Good heavens. I don't know. Steve, do you like freak? I don't know. I find myself, I don't get anxiety, but I find myself not looking forward to boarding a plane ever. Because I never know what I'm going
to
get.
The thing that gets me is, why would you want to be in Group A? Group A, you have to get on first and you have to sit down the entire time. Like, why don't I always am the last person to board? I don't get why people.
Are you really?
Absolutely.
Are you worried about overhead space?
No, I just would rather not be in a tube for as long as I have to be. Why don't you just wait in the terminal or wait at the gate and just eat food?
I like to just like go to sleep though. So I'll get on the plane and then I will literally go to sleep. I will go to sleep until they make sure that your seatbelt's buckled up, because I got to shut down. I don't want to, it's because it's always so awkward, but I just want to get in, but also it's the overhead space. Although I never bring a ton of stuff with me. I always have like a carry on and then a little thing that I shove under my seat. But then you get like suit jacket dudes or ladies with the straw hats that want to like shove their stuff in the overhead bin and then nobody can get their suitcases or anything else up there. And I'm like, ugh, I don't know.
That's the one flaw that I didn't think about is if you wait to get on last, they sometimes, most of the time, run out of carry-on space. They have to put one of those fake tags on it and sit it by the door. That's happened to me the last few times, but I'd rather just wait.
Yeah, I always, after I had a suitcase that was utterly destroyed by their little system where they bring the suitcases up, because I had a gate check once, and it literally crushed my suitcase and broke some stuff inside and all of that. It like crushed it. It was like a pancake. It was wild. And so then now I don't do that anymore. But thankfully was on a flight and I was arriving home, so I didn't need any of the stuff in there really. But yeah, so I make sure that I don't know, but I agree with you. I hate getting on and having to be on the tube, because then you get people like that. That's crazy. Like, what in the world? I don't understand. So we got this. I feel like that's like peak culture right now, but I also feel like this is too. Listen to how bad crime is getting in this one particular city. So this is Daily Caller. So in Oakland, California, crime has gotten so bad, they are now replacing stoplights, traffic lights, with stop signs. Because people are stealing the copper and the electrical boxes. They're stripping the traffic lights of the copper. And they're stealing the electrical boxes for the traffic lights. And so at numerous intersections throughout Oakland and around the Bay Area, they have been taking down stoplights. This is according to CBS. And they said that they started not replacing stoplights at intersections where they were stolen, and then they just started being proactive and just taking them out entirely. And they said then, on top of it, they have one of those huge homeless encampments that stretches for over three blocks of an entire neighborhood. And they illegally connect to the city's power, and that totally throws off the traffic lights and apparently like shorts things out. And then they tamper with the electrical, and then they put heavy cement blocks over the electrical boxes to protect, I guess, their power hookup. I don't know. This is crazy. So they're not even enforcing the law. They're just literally replacing them with stop signs. So can you imagine how much dangerous that's going to be? How much more dangerous is that going to be? That's craziness. Peak America, peak society in this country right now. So they're just taking them out. And they said that the stop signs, now people don't want to stop because a lot of these, there's like homeless or there's very aggressive panhandlers or druggies that are on the corner. And people don't want to come to like a full stop now at the stop sign. So they just, you know, at least with the lights, they kind of had to. But now they're like, everybody's just blowing through it. And you're not really seeing anything help with the blue state blueprint of California, because the budget proposal, it's going to get worse. Gavin Newsom said that he wasn't going to raise taxes to fix California's deficit. They took in, I think it was something like, what was it, like $55 billion in revenue. I want to say it was fiscal year 22, 23. And his budget proposal, they have $18 billion in tax hikes for businesses now. Because remember, they lost $24 billion after they spread it out amongst 30 different homeless programs throughout the state. And they only tracked the one that was the shot that was giving vodka shots in San Francisco. That was the only one that they actually tracked. They didn't track any of the stuff. And so now they lost $24 billion. They're running a $46 billion deficit. And the budget proposal, they're trying to get some of this money back by including an $18 billion tax hike for businesses. And meanwhile, other locales are looking at upping property tax. Your property taxes already aren't doing anything, clearly. I mean, if you looked around in California lately, it's crazy. We got Days of These United States coming up that we're going to get into. Also, we're also going to discuss how illegal immigration is just rocking schools and their resources. We've got some examples as well. We've got 2024, all kinds of stuff on the way as we roll towards the conclusion of our first hour. Our partners over at ReadyWise, because, you know, if you can't even have stoplights because people are taking copper and everything might go sideways, you might as well just have delicious, nutritious meals to eat and have for your family. So you never know what you're going to eat. You never have to worry about it. This is what ReadyWise is about. It's always important to be prepared. And you can use code DANA20 to save 20% on any regularly priced item. This is an American company. And from start to finish, from the food to the way it's packed to where it is packed to who is packing it, it's done right here in the U.S. of A. So you're supporting American jobs from start to finish. You're helping America be self-sustaining and yourself at the same time, because you have meals at the ready, whether it's a sudden storm, a power outage, maybe supply chain disruption, or maybe you just like want to go hunting and you don't want to be like my grandpa did and take a gallon of unsweet tea and Spam to eat every single day for every single meal. You can have ReadyWise. Yeah, they have an emergency 1 month supply, 2-bucket bundle that includes 36 pouches of premium survival food, 2000 plus calories and 50 plus grams of protein per day. Everything is made with high quality ingredients, freeze dried, dehydrated, no refrigeration required, 25 year shelf life, just add water. The time to prepare is now. So visit ReadyWise.com, use code DANA20, save 20% off any regularly priced item. That's ReadyWise.com, code DANA20.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that? I mean, is there something known in the industry about how Diddy treated his artists?
Is that a Jello shot? What is he drinking? She's...
So I'm going to get some cheeks after this horsepower joint. I'm just going off what Mace said. Mace took me to Biggie. I don't really know Puffers like Mace know Puff. So I appreciate what Mace said. And of course, that's my brother. So if he felt that way, then he felt that way. I can't really tell you how Puff moves or anything like that. Mace may know better than me because he was signed to Puff. I wasn't. But my show does come on at 8 a.m. Eastern on YouTube. It's called It Is What It Is. And y'all make sure y'all check it out. I mean, I might get some more information out of Mace from there. But for me to tell you how Puff acting and all that, I don't know. I never was signed to him.
Yeah. What about the industry in general? I mean, so many people have pointed out that Diddy couldn't get away with this stuff if there weren't a lot of people protecting him. Do you think that's the case?
Who the talent agent for this joint? Like, you think I'll be sitting around watching what Diddy do and all this? I didn't know this was a Diddy joint that all invited me to. Who booked me for this joint? I'll be sitting around watching Diddy and all that. Yeah,
thanks.
Come on, man.
Thanks for
crazy,
joining
man.
Us. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you for having me. You enjoy.
Oh my gosh. She was like trying to keep it together. This is a chick on CNN who is, you know, she's talking to this guy named, what's his name? Cameron Giles. And I don't even know what the horsepower drink he had there was, Steve. Was it a Jello shot? I don't know what that was. It looked like Tussin. It looked like he had a cough drop cup of Tussin that he took. And I don't want to ask anything else about what he said, because I feel like his heart wasn't in this interview. You know, it just like he just was not really wanting to answer questions. But, you know, of course, you know, CNN's like, let's have a serious interview with one of Diddy's friends. I just feel like if you're going to call yourself Diddy, which sounds like a verb of lewdness, then maybe don't do what the verb of lewdness seems to imply. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't be diddying people. I don't know. It just seems like that. What is it always with these cats where it's like Anthony Weiner or, you know, anybody, like, good night. So, yeah, that was good. Was it CNN or MSNBC that interviewed that Michael Avenatti from jail?
That was CNN. He contributes still. Oh. And then he went on The View, remember?
Oh, my gosh. That's right. And they had him from jail. Like, they had his hookup. They had his hit from jail. And now they got this guy. They got Cameron Giles. So the reporter speaking to him, Abby Phillip, she seemed kind of stunned. But I don't know. That was wild. But that's, you know, I feel like CNN deserves that, though. I do. We have a lot more on the way, including, I don't know if you guys have seen, there were apparently a bunch of progressive women that spent thousands of dollars to go out into nature and yell at the trees. I don't know what the trees did to them, but apparently that's something that happened. And we've got to make fun of it because it's our duty here on this program in America to make fun of stupidity. We've got that for you. We've got Florida Man on the way. We got the latest of 2024. We got all kinds of stuff. That big bombshell from that Cohen thing yesterday. That guy is such a slug. We got a whole bunch of stuff on the way. Stick with us. Second hour coming up. So there's a company that I just started using called Ammo Squared, and Ammo Squared helps you stay stocked up on ammunition, like automatically. It's a truly automated system. You set it and you forget it. It's an ammo purchasing program, and you can pick whatever caliber you want. You can set your budget. You can select your shipping, and that's it. And the cool thing is that it builds up, your ammunition builds up over time, and it's stored in this climate-controlled warehouse, and it sends it automatically when you want it, when you have it selected to send. And ammunition is a hard asset. I mean, it's something that's tangible. I think we all remember the uncertainty, like back in, 2019, 2020, when there were certain calibers that were kind of hard to find. And we were calling some of our retail friends and saying, when do you get a shipment of this? Can we get some? Can we lay claim to some when it comes in? And in times of uncertainty and inflation, the value of all this stuff only goes up. So Ammo Squared is there to help smooth out the rough spots of ammunition availability. It's like an ammo 401k or something like that. You set it up. You have ammo for that rainy day when store shelves are empty and ammo's hard to find. So you can learn more and you can sign up today at AmmoSquared.com and ensure that you're prepared for whatever may come your way. That's AmmoSquared.com.
How much does it cost to live in your state? New studies show it costs a family of four over $177,000 to live comfortably. In Massachusetts, it's over $300,000. Government continues to put their hands in one industry after another.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
My administration is working around the clock to free the remaining hostages, just as we have freed hostages already. And here with us today is Hirsch Goldberg Poland, and still, he is not here with us, but he's still being held by Hamas. And Rachel and John are here with us. Stand up, guys.
Oh my gosh. He had to correct himself after another really bad gaffe last night, because he was at this Jewish heritage celebration at the White House. That's Joe Biden. And he was saying that one of the U.S., he named U.S. citizen, Hirsch Goldberg Poland. And he goes, oh, he's here with us today. Oh, wait, he's not here with us today. No, he's not, because he's literally being held hostage by Hamas in Gaza. So, oh my gosh, that's so bad. Welcome back to the program. At least he invited one of the hostage families, right, to the White House, because they've been ignored. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. It's good to be with you. Top of our second hour here, and you can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the radio program. You can catch us on X and Rumble and YouTube and Facebook and all of that. Channel 3047, DirecTV, all of that good stuff. And Goldberg Poland is a dual citizen. So he's one of, I think it's like five or six Americans that are still held by Hamas in Gaza. And I don't know when the last time that they had proof of life for him. I think it was something like at the beginning of the year. For some of these other hostages, there hasn't been anything offered in terms of proof of life. At least I guess that he finally said the name of one of them. They said more about Mike Brown yesterday than they said about these hostages ever. We'll talk more about the Brown thing as well coming up. Speaking of the Bidens, are you guys ready for a soap opera to end all soap operas? When I was younger, my grandmother used to watch what she called were her stories. Those were the, are they still on? The soap operas, are they still on? Or is it just like been replaced by reality TV now. They used to have like the daytime soap operas, and I feel like my kids would not have any idea what those are. But my grandmother used to watch them. My grandmother and my older cousins watched them growing up. They watched Days of Our Lives, and then the one that I thought was always hysterically named, The Bold and the Beautiful, because they were bold and also beautiful. It's just so goofy. And they were always these long, drawn-out things. And I just remember the bad guy in Days of Our Lives was Stefano. He was the ever-present bad guy. He was behind every bad plot. He was the worst, laziest plot device ever, but it worked. Anyway, it's about to take a new turn because it's like reality television, but it's going to be a daytime soap opera. Let me just explain this headline to you because it took me a minute to realize this wasn't the same person, that it was three different people, okay? Hunter Biden's ex-wife, baby mama, and sister-in-law turned lover to take the witness stand in his gun trial. So, you know, Hunter Biden has a trial coming up for the felony gun charges. These are the charges that he got because he told on himself. When he wrote his memoir, he wrote in his book that there was a period of time, and he gave literally the dates of when he was as high as a kite. And it just turns out that he also went and purchased a gun and filled out a form 4473, that's your background check form, at the exact same time that he said he was high as a kite in his book. And his defense was, well, he was on drugs. You can't trust that his dates are going to be right. I'm not even kidding you. Hands to sky. That was literally their attorney's defense. But I'm just, you know. So he's going to trial on these weapons charges. And it starts June 3rd. So, again, these are all three different people. It sounds like it could be one person, but it's not. Ex-wife, baby mama, and sister-in-law turned lover. Three separate people. So his ex-wife is going to be taking the witness stand. His sister-in-law turned lover is going to be taking the witness stand. And his baby mama, she's going to be taking the witness stand. And they're going to talk about how he was constantly, what has been described as here is his near constant drug use during that October 2018 period. When he admitted in his memoir that he was doing drugs daily, nonstop. And then he also just happened, the paperwork came out that was the exact frame of time, exactly, that he went and filled out a form to go buy a gun. And as you know, maybe you don't know, but you should, on that 4473 form, that federal form, there's literally a question that asks if you're using drugs or you're a drug user. And he apparently said no on his form, which, in fact, in his memoir, he said, no, I was totally high as a kite on drugs. So this is, oh my gosh, this is going to be just crazy. And he did this interview where he was trying to say, and this is the other thing that floored me. So Daily Beast ran this story on Monday. Or no, sorry. It actually came out Sunday. They ran the story of him. And it says, Hunter Biden reveals why he's punching back at Fox News. Right. And he did this interview. He did it Sunday. It was published Monday. He was trying to say that some of the photos of the drug use that were on his laptop were misleading. Now, the laptop in question is the one that he had left at that repair shop, that Mac guy. And at the repair shop, he had to sign a waiver saying if he didn't come back in 6 months to get his property, then it becomes the property of the computer shop owner. And he got mad because the Daily Beast had asked him, I'm not even making this up, you guys. I swear to you, this trial is going to be luscious. The Daily Beast had asked him, and again, this ran yesterday, about the crack pipe photo. You guys remember the photo of Biden, his laying in the bed, his head on a pillow, and he's got a glass pipe in his mouth, right? And they go, well, you know, they asked him about the crack pipe photo and he got mad at him. And he goes, that's not a crack pipe. That's a meth pipe. And then he tried to act like it was staged. Okay. So, does that make a difference that you would get that mad? No, that's not a crack pipe. That's a meth pipe. Oh, sorry, Mr. Blow and Ho. I didn't know that. I honestly, if you had to quiz me on the difference between a crack pipe and a meth pipe, I literally would not know the difference. It's a glass pipe. I don't, this is where we don't know about the drugs here on the Dana Show. I don't know what makes it different. I don't know if it, and it's such a grainy, like, clearly it's a drug pipe. A glass pipe in his mouth. But he said, no, that's not a crack pipe. It's a meth pipe. Oh, okay. So tell us about the meth pipe then, Daily Beast asked. Because apparently his ex-wife, in text messages that were found on this laptop, she was upset because she found, quote, a few crack pipes in the family car that their daughter was borrowing to drive, and she had to take them out. And she said that she, quote, found drugs or paraphernalia on approximately a dozen occasions, which she discarded in a trash can. And so he was upset because they asked him about the wrong drug of pipe, the wrong pipe that I don't know. I don't even know what to expect with this trial. But if it's anything like he was mad over the question from the Daily Beast, that's something else. No, it's not. It's a meth pipe. Good heavens. I can't tell. I couldn't tell the difference. Steve, I can't tell the difference. Can you tell the difference? Because I can't tell the difference in glass pipes. They look like drug pipes. That's all I know. I'm like, look, sorry, we're not like drug connoisseurs. We didn't know any of that stuff. Oh my gosh. I want to switch it up for you and talk to you about a business opportunity that I wish I would have undertaken. I'm actually really upset about this. I can't believe I didn't think about this. So apparently there were women that paid $4,000 to go out in nature and like smack some sticks around. And I've seen this on a number of different, I've seen videos, different videos of this all over X. I've seen it first appeared on YouTube, and there was a thing called Concerned Citizen that had tweeted it, and it said that these women, apparently this was like this organized thing, and these women, it's a rage ritual retreat is what it's called, and they organized this rage ritual retreat for women to go out into nature and bash sticks on the ground to deal with anger. And I just got to point out, they're on a path. They didn't even leave the paved path to do this. Watch this, because this is not a joke. And I just don't know why I didn't come up with this business idea. This is the rage ritual.
Would you pay $4,000 to swing big sticks and scream in the woods with the aim of releasing your anger?
It is imperative that we allow ourselves safe spaces to release this fiery, hot emotion from within us.
So it's called the Rage Ritual Retreat. And the founder's name is Mia. And she describes herself as a spiritual fairy godmother and is known online as Mia Magic.
You're gonna need big sticks.
Right now, I feel angry. Right now, I feel frustrated. Everything, whatever you're feeling, let it out. Express yourself.
Now, participants are encouraged to scream, to think of people and experiences that have wronged them. And swing big sticks.
This is literally, it's a temper tantrum that they call a rage ritual. And I don't know, why do you have to pay $4,000 to do this, number one? And the first trek that they went to with this Mia Banducci lady was to go to Scotland to do this. Why couldn't you just like go do this in your backyard, first off, number one? Number two, why do you have to pay? Because the ticket prices range from $2,000 to $4,000. The one day version is $222 per ticket, and that's just one day to go with her into the woods and do that. And then they apparently have sacred rage ceremonies. And so they pay money. First off, I got to give props for people who are like, yeah, if you pay me $200 a day, you can walk into the woods with me and scream your head off and bang a stick on the ground and actually have the brass, right, to like expect money for that. I got to give props for that because that's pretty bold, right? Also, why didn't I think about this? Like they didn't even get off the beaten path. Somebody said they didn't get off the beaten path. They didn't. They're on a paved road. And all of these videos where these chicks are out in nature screeching and hollering, they don't even get off the paved road. They don't actually go into nature. They stay right on the damn road. But what happens if you were to like show up at one of these events with your own stick? And you didn't pay the fee and you're just like on the periphery and you just want to do it too. Like, can they run you out of nature? Who does this? What the hell's wrong with these women? You know these women are all Democrats. First off, you know they are. They said that they hold these rituals in the woods so people can make noise without fear of bothering other people nearby. Because they all sound like dying animals. I will say that. Which I would be kind of afraid if you're going up into Canada and you're making this noise that a bear would think that you are an injured animal and would try to come and eat you. $222. Why am I not doing this? I mean holding it and like charging these broads money. Can you imagine? A secret rage ceremony. Come out into the wilderness with a stick. You need to touch grass more. And this is something that Steve noted. If you think that this is like getting in touch with nature, you need to touch grass more. But how? I guess the economy is not affecting these broads. If they can spend $200 a day to go out and do this kind of stuff and pay someone else to legitimize their tantrum by giving it, you know, a goopy name like Rage Ritual. This is wild. Patriot Mobile is, they're good people. And one of the fun things, the cool things that they do is that they really put their money where their mouth is, where it concerns protecting the things that you vote against. And Patriot Mobile has amazing plans. I mean, you can, with Patriot Mobile, you can get a plan tailor-made for you, your family of whatever size it is, your business, no matter what size your business is. If you're a dink, you know, like, what is it? The dual income, no kid people. If you're those people, they got plans for you, got plans for everybody. Patriot Mobile covers absolutely everyone. And they have the best, most dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. So you're getting the best service, but you're not funding the left. And when you switch, you're going to save money. You can keep your phone. You can keep your number. You can upgrade. The choice is yours. They have a 100% based U.S. customer service team that makes switching easy. And I saw on Facebook, I don't know if I can say it now, but I saw on Facebook that they're also giving 2 months of free service. Of course, you can also get free activation using code Dana. If you switch to Patriot Mobile right now, they had it on their Facebook page. You can get 2 months of free service, too. So that's a really cool thing to think about. And again, free activation using code Dana. So visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and use promo code Dana to get free activation. Make that switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
10 bodies were found scattered around Mexico's once glamorous resort city of Acapulco, which has been engulfed by violence linked to cartel crime, said authorities today. The bodies of 2 women and 4 men left Monday night on an avenue near a market, according to their public security office. The media has reported the bodies were thrown from a car. It's a shooting in the Zepeda neighborhood. They said that they've been finding this more and more. And I don't know. You got to make sure you're staying safe and going to the safe spots. This is kind of sad, too. Apparently, Elvis Presley's iconic Graceland is going to be auctioned off amid foreclosure. But his granddaughter, Riley Keough, has been fighting it. She said that the signatures on a lot of the documents were fraudulent. And there's some questions as to whether or not the notary was legitimate. And I don't know. There's a lot of it could have been questionable. But there were also a lot of rumors that Lisa Marie Presley wasn't maybe in her best of mind or health and was making some decisions based on money. And I don't know if there was due diligence done. All that, I'm sure, is going to come out in the lawsuit that Keough's filed to stop it. Because, gosh, that would be bad. This HIV-positive Ohio sex worker had contact with more than 211 people. And she looks like it. Ugh. She had over 200 clients knowing she was HIV-positive. And state officials are now saying that anyone who is with Linda Lachesse needs to come forward and get tested because you might have the HIV. That's horrible. First off, that looks like a Tim Burton character. This cycling is supposed to apparently improve your knee pain or arthritis. People have been told to keep their joints moving. Now bicycling. I hate bicycling. Can I be honest? I hate cycling. I don't like any of it. If you like it, if that's your jam, that's fine. A moose killed a man in Alaska because he was trying to photograph its calves. If you don't mean to pose a threat, don't ever even act like you're going to pose a threat to any kind of moose calves or baby bears or anything like that. Cubs, nothing. But a 7-year-old Alaskan man, he was trying to take photos of 2 newborn moose calves. He was attacked and killed by their mother on Sunday. He was from Homer, Alaska, according to Alaska Department of Public Safety. They said that he was looking. He found them. And the mama moose was none too happy because she thought it was threatening behavior. 706 people named Kyle got together in Texas, but it wasn't enough for a world record. They were trying to set a record, but apparently, and the crown is in Bosnia, they got 2,325 people named Ivan together in 2017. They were trying to get the same number, people with the same number of name, the largest number together in one spot. Coming up, we got a lot more on the way, including some 24. Stick with us. Black Rifle Coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Everything else is just garbage. And it's actual like coffee aficionados, people who know what they're doing. They don't just find a niche market and go, I want to make some coffee. No, they actually make really good coffee. They're coffee nerds. And I don't say that as like a mean thing. I mean, it's just true. They have the best beans. They have the best roast. They roast the beans 5 days a week. Their facilities in Utah and Tennessee. This is veteran-owned, veteran-run. They hire veterans and active duty, and they support our first responders, and they help veterans fight health issues. They help them with PTSD. They help them with everything, and they serve premium coffee to people who love America. Now, every bag, like I said, roasted right here in the U.S. of A, and you got a variety of choices. You can get your ground beans. You can get your whole beans. You can get your K-cups. You're ready to drink, but you're also going to find apparel, the kettles, the mugs, the grinders, everything you need for your perfect cup of coffee. Try for yourself today. You can save 20% using code Dana at blackriflecoffee.com, but you're only going to get that 20% off with code Dana at blackriflecoffee.com.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think the revelation, though, this morning about the theft of $30,000, which was doubled because they covered his taxes, so $60,000, it came out in a glancing, unclear way on direct. It came out like a bomb earlier today. I don't know how much they can do to fix that. It just, at a certain point, it is the fact Michael Cohen did steal this money. And what makes that really so important, Wolf, is it's not as if Michael Cohen was just stealing on the side. That'd be bad enough. The problem is he was stealing from the exact reimbursement at issue in this case. So the prosecution's core argument is Donald Trump knew what that $420,000 was all about. He was totally read in on it. Turns out Michael Cohen was stealing from him within that $420,000.
Does Michael Cohen's acknowledgement, admission that he stole tens of thousands of dollars from the Trump Organization potentially open him up to further criminal prosecution?
It's a great question. The answer is not anymore because the statute of limitations has run out. But it's a very fair question to ask, gee, folks, of the jury. They gave him a free pass. He committed larceny. It's a higher degree of a felony than what Donald Trump is charged
with.
That's
all we wanted.
Yet they gave Michael Cohen.
So it was actually a lesser, it was actually a higher charge than what they were trying to get this with these paperwork error charges. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. We're at the bottom of this second hour. That was, I think, a very interesting point, and I think it shines some light on the motivations of all of this because, you know, larceny, that's a serious crime. Serious crime in the state of New York, serious crime, but particularly in New York. And it bears a harsher penalty, harsher charge than this accounting error. That's what's so goofy about all of this. I mean, Democrats overplay their hand every single time. They overplay their hand. So, again, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Hope you're listening coast to coast. You can listen to the radio program. You can stream the radio program, watch the video component, the simulcast as well. I don't think that by the time all of this is gone through, Democrats are making a big gamble here. And that when the primary first began, I thought it was way too soon. Everybody thought it was way too soon. That's why everyone is so fatigued right now. And my warning to Republicans at the time was that you're going to have a lack of enthusiasm by the time you get towards midsummer. People are going to be tired of this stuff. They're going to be tired of it. And then Democrats think that by wearing people out more, particularly with regard to the trials, the litigation, that maybe will just depress turnout. I think it may have the opposite intended effect, particularly when you couple that with everybody being broke, because people are going to be so tired of it, they're going to want to vote to make it go away. And that's ultimately, I think, what some of these Democrats are playing with here. And now you're not even going to have the Mar-a-Lago case, which is crazy to me that they messed this up. Out of all of the cases where you could have just very clinically because of the statute involved with regard to classified information. That's where you could have honestly I think that's where he was in most danger of having an actual legitimate conviction. But they messed that up because they were so eager to stage photos that they couldn't tell you what boxes of classified information had been moved and what hadn't. They didn't even have the proper respective cover letters for the classified information because they took everything apart. Then they didn't even put it back together. They didn't even take notes of what they did. So then the people like that Walt Nauta guy, they can't even ask him, well, did you move this box? Well, he doesn't know because you guys can't confirm that this was the box that was in the bathroom that had been moved. You can't confirm it. How can you answer? How can you expect someone to answer in the affirmative or negative on this when you actually don't know if this is the box in question? So they messed up their own case. And then with this, that detail that came out with the Cohen, the larceny, that's a pretty big deal. And I think it just kind of highlights how ridiculous all this has been. I mean, there's a reason why you had a handful of prosecutors that didn't want to take this. It's a double standard. Speaking of double standards, yesterday, I don't know if you saw this, I wrote a piece about it over at Substack. But there was this effort from lawmakers like Cori Bush, and I think you even had Kamala Harris and others that were pushing in the NAACP because they said, oh, Michael Brown should have been celebrating his 28th birthday today. He should have been celebrating his 28th birthday. And we're going to continue to say his name and fight for justice and accountability. I have written so much about this over the years. I mean, this was, you know, St. Louis is our hometown. We moved to Texas like right before this happened. And Kane, who's out yesterday and today, he's from Ferguson. And I think people tend to forget the reason Michael Brown isn't alive to celebrate his 28th birthday, why he wasn't around yesterday, is because he chose to act like a criminal. To quickly recap, since people like Cori Bush and the vice president and the NAACP and all these other lawmakers and CNN and MSNBC seem to forget what happened. Remember, Michael Brown robbed a convenience store the day he died. The day he died, he robbed a convenience store. He is on CCTV grabbing the much smaller store owner by his shirt collar and threatening him. He stole a bunch of Swisher Sweets. That prompted the store owner to call police in the first place. That is why there was a BOLO, a be on the lookout on Brown. And it's why Officer Darren Wilson, who was in the area doing his job, was looking for him. There were three separate forensic investigations, including one from Obama's own DOJ, Eric Holder. And they all concluded the same thing, that corresponded not just with what Darren Wilson had told investigators, but also eyewitness testimonies that came during the grand jury portion. It was that Brown had gunpowder residue on his hand. And that was consistent with the testimony from Wilson that he had gone for his gun and had his finger in the trigger guard. And it was consistent with the eyewitness accounts that Brown had also gone for Wilson's gun. Now, a reminder, the prosecutor in this case, when I worked before the passing of Andrew Breitbart, I wrote over at Breitbart. I had a whole bunch of stories on this. If you get my newsletter at Substack, you got to read my old reporting on this. Far left Democrat prosecutor Bob McCullough was the one who was the prosecutor on this case. Just to give you a measure of how far left the Democrat prosecutor Bob McCullough is, back during the 2008 presidential campaign, Bob McCullough headed up what was called an Obama Truth Squad. He and another attorney, Jennifer Joyce, got together and they threatened to persecute and prosecute people who said false things about then Senator Barack Obama's presidential campaign. They called them the Truth Squad. They also worked with a far left sheriff. So that's the prosecutor that headed up this case. If there was someone that was going to get charges on Darren Wilson, it was going to be Bob McCullough. He was the star lefty prosecutor in St. Louis. But he couldn't manifest charges against Wilson based on the evidence. And the grand jury of Brown's peers and Ferguson community members could not recommend charges against Wilson based on the evidence. In fact, three separate far-left prosecutors could not bring charges against Wilson based on the evidence because the evidence didn't support it. There were numerous far-left prosecutors. Not only did you have Bob McCullough, but you also have Wesley Bell. He also opted. He was the last one. He could not bring charges. He went on about racial injustice and everything else. And he said, quote, that we could not prove that he shot him, that he committed murder under Missouri law. There was no crime. This is over and over again. They tried over and over. Brown isn't celebrating his birthday anymore because he chose not to with his criminal actions. And what gets me is I looked online, NAACP's tweeting about Mike Brown. They don't have a singular damn tweet about Dexter Taylor. Cori Bush doesn't have a singular tweet about Dexter Taylor. Kamala Harris doesn't have a singular tweet about Dexter Taylor. A man who is wrongfully convicted, who is an innocent person, who is sitting in prison because he exercised his federally affirmed constitutional rights. Private gunsmithing. He is a rights icon. He is fighting for natural rights, and he is sitting in Rikers right now. He didn't go and rob a convenience store. He didn't do anything but exercise his rights as a free citizen, a law-abiding citizen, and I don't see a single one of these organizations tweeting any kind of support for him. I don't see them sharing his Gibson Go. I don't see Kamala Harris linking the Gibson Go and encouraging people to donate the way she did for rioters. I don't see Cori Bush out there doing any of this. But they'll celebrate somebody like Mike Brown, who is caught on CCTV doing all this nonsense. Somebody like Mike Brown, who, and this is interesting, everyone wanted to discount the minority witnesses in Ferguson who testified that, yes, he did go after Darren Wilson. That is why the grand jury could not recommend charges. That is why you had four far-left prosecutors. That's why you had numerous separate forensic investigations. They all concluded the same thing. This guy was the aggressor. Wilson was protecting himself. But not a single thing for Dexter Taylor. Now you tell me who actually cares more about rights. You tell me. Who cares more about rights? Who cares more about the innocent person? Who cares more about the common man? Because it's not these organizations. Definitely not. Pretty amazing. And then, of course, you guys remember after all of this, there was the summer of rioting. Ferguson burned to the ground. Historically black neighborhoods burned to the ground. Businesses, three generations, black owned, burned to the ground. I'll never forget watching an interview that someone did of a beauty store owner in Ferguson. She was so proud. Her business. And because the left likes to note this until they don't. Minority owned. And her business had been targeted by rioters and burned to the ground. For what? Because somebody got caught on CCTV stealing Swisher Sweets, bullying a store owner, and then they try to go and kill a cop? NAACP never tweeted about those business owners, by the way. They never tweeted about that beauty shop owner. They never tweeted about the barbecue place that was three generations owned that burned to the ground. They didn't tweet about any of that stuff. Never there when you need them. Always there when you don't.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
23-year-old Florida man who ran away from a mental health clinic on Sunday was critically wounded in a police shooting because officers encountered the guy armed with pepper spray and a knife. They said that health clinic said he was acting erratic and he was running away. He apparently had some serious like mental health issues. The clinic said that he was an immediate threat. So officers, unfortunately, had to engage. But he just like apparently just like ran down the he got tased and still ran. Sounds like there's like something else happening there. But he did go to a local hospital and undergo surgery. He's in serious condition. Good heavens. Ran down the road. And they had to chase him. Ran even after being tased. One Florida man decided to play hide and seek with police. And he decided to hide out in a clothes dryer. They always will find you. Escambia County, they were searching police for 31-year-old David Jerome Jackson for 2 months. They got a tip that he was inside this Pensacola house, and they found him inside a tiny dryer drum. And I mean tiny. It's like a compact dryer. I literally have no idea how this guy got into this dryer. If you guys don't see this, I got to put it in Slack. I don't know how in the world this dude got in this dryer. Juan's going to show it. Look how tiny, if you're watching the simulcast, look how tiny that dryer is. It's like a it's like a play dryer. That's like a play dryer. That's a compact dryer. There's a full-grown dude who got into that. And they found him in it. And so that's them opening the drawer, and you can see his hands sticking out. That's crazy. So they did get him. They said that he looked very embarrassed, and he looked very guilty. But he was arrested on charges of shooting into somebody's house, assault with a deadly weapon, and he's also a convicted felon, and he's a prohibited possessor. He's got a violent record, so he wasn't allowed to, you know, have anything, but apparently he did. So, stolen school bus. A Florida man's charged in a wild ride from Tampa to Miami in a stolen school bus. Florida man was arrested in a head-spinning incident that left authorities chasing a stolen school bus. 32-year-old Daniel Saez, under the influence reportedly, commandeered a Hillsborough County School District bus and went on a joyride spanning hundreds of miles. He set off Saturday night. His field trip came to an end when they caught up with him in Sarasota. And he told officers, yes, I am high and drunk. He actually told them that he was high and drunk. I'm not making that up. He told them that when he stole the bus, emphasizing how reckless it was. He went 280 miles in this. And they got him 60 miles south of Tampa. And he got grand theft auto charge. They booked him in jail, sobered him up. And so, good heavens. Thankfully, nobody was like hurt or injured or anything like that. That could have been really bad. Good night. Anyway, you don't want anything like that happening. But good heavens. This Florida man stripped naked, shouted for grandma in a stranger's home. This is Florida man. The homeowners, officers managed to respond and calm the guy down and escort him out. But what ended up happening is the homeowners, they wanted to remain anonymous, but this guy invaded their house, took off his clothes, shouted incoherently, kept calling out for his grandmother. They called police, and the police showed up, and they were able to calm him down and arrest him. But I wish it would have said more what the homeowners were doing. Like, how would you do? Somebody barges in your house and they strip off their clothes and start screaming for their grandmother. That's kind of weird. Tomorrow, because I'm out of time right now, we got to talk about a guy accused of sexual battery while wearing an I'm him t-shirt. Okay. We have pasta fights, pool fights, and more. And then a heroic Florida man who rescued a pet alligator and it was caught on video. So we'll have that for you tomorrow. We have our third hour on the way. Stick with us. More in store.
And Lord, we pray for the Iranian people who mourn the death of their president. We pray in your loving name. Amen.
Oh my gosh. That's the Senate chaplain who is praying. The people are not mourning this guy. The people are celebrating that the butcher of Tehran is dead. I don't know how much more tone deaf you can be, but good heavens. I mean, they've been celebrating it. Welcome back to the program, top of this third hour. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program as well. Find us YouTube, Facebook, DirecTV, all that good stuff. There's no words. This is so goofy. But that it just is so tone deaf. They opened with a prayer for the people who mourned a genocidal freak. I mean, who is the left anymore? Ibrahim Raisi, who was killed in this helicopter crash. And by the way, when I sent out last night, if you get the newsletter, if you're a subscriber, I included the shots of the mountainside where they found the chopper on. The helicopter took off in super foggy conditions. They had no visibility. Makes me wonder if it was on purpose, which kudos to the pilot. But it, the idea that anybody is celebrating this, or not celebrating, or mourning this guy, I do these people not pay attention to what happens in the world? They said that anybody who knew of passing of enough of aviation and low altitude flying know that you can't have low vis in mountains. That doesn't work. That doesn't work. And Iran's been suggesting somehow that the United States did it. I don't think that they made him take off like that, dude. Don't think they did. So Iran has been the ally of, was the ally of the Obama Biden administration. Biden's treated them as an ally. I don't know who they are anymore, the left. I don't know who they think they are. They had the Matt Miller, the State Department spokesman, release yesterday this official condolence letter that people were really shocked by, because this guy was an absolute brutalist. He was an absolute brutalist. And this chaplain, this Senate chaplain, this is, I guess he has no clue really who this guy is. Treating them as though he's a saint, acting as though this guy is, this guy murdered kids. They had televised, they would have these like minutes long trials where they would convict people of, I guess, not being Islamic fundamentalist enough or enough in their regime. And he'd sentence them to death. I mean, he was a genocidal murderer. Absolutely. I mean, genocide he's one of the reasons why that word exists. Thousands of innocent people he murdered. He directly murdered them. So I don't know why the Senate decides to, that's how they start their day. And the Iranian, by the way, you're also completely misrepresenting what is happening in Iran by acting or claiming that the Iranian people are in any way mourning this guy. That's an insult to the Iranian people. One of the things that the left always enjoyed parroting was European views on the understanding that Americans have of international politics and geopolitics, right? What's happening in the other side of the world? They think we're naive and limited in scope and xenophobic, etc. I can't think anything more that fulfills those descriptions than describing this Ibrahim Raisi as being missed by the Iranian people. You are really not reading the pulse of a nation. There are so many people that were celebrating in the streets who's actually had members of their family killed by this guy's regime and this guy. No, what the Senate chaplain, really what they should have done is they should have started off by praying for the families that the butcher of Tehran brutalized. Matt Miller and the State Department and the Biden administration should have kicked off their statement by saying they pray for the victims of the families that this guy brutalized, that this butcher robbed, by torturing and executing their innocent family members. That's what they should have done, but they didn't. And it just goes to show you they have no idea what's happening. They don't know what's happening in that country, or they do, and they're sanctioning it by ignoring it. How many demonstrations have we seen over the years that have been so brutally silenced? I mean, the Green Revolution, you guys, we talked about this actually a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Where Nita, the woman who became the face of that revolution, when she was shot in the head on camera by a rooftop sniper because they thought she was getting out. Her and her father were in a car. They saw the people that were protesting the regime. They got out to see what was going on. She actually wasn't even really part of the demonstration because there's tons of other videos showing this. And there was all of this eyewitness report. They just got out to see. They wanted to watch and see what was happening. They weren't actually demonstrating, but it didn't matter. One of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard saw their opportunity and they shot her, and she was murdered on camera. She bled out. She fell to the ground and bled out on camera. That's the kind of stuff that this guy did, that he sanctioned, that he encouraged, that he told them to do. That's why they covered their faces over there. You see the left over here that cover their faces. They go and they get an accessory at H&M, and then they go out and they think it's cool that they're, you know, they're hiding their face. They think that they're doing something cool. They did it over there because the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, they were finding out who these people were, and they were going and murdering their families on this guy's order. They were sniping them in the streets. It just goes, they have no clue. And then you have the ICC, the International Criminal Court, that sends out something about Israel and nothing about this. About Israel, but nothing about this. Nothing about all of that. They never had a statement on this. I wanted to share with you this piece as well. As we were talking about this a little earlier, the aid and how now it's being stolen. One of the bases for the International Criminal Court's claim that they need to bring a warrant for war crimes against Netanyahu and the defense minister, etc., was starvation. That is one of the direct claims in this, amongst others. And what they are not acknowledging is that not only did Israel give aid, but now, so you have the floaty little pier that Joe Biden made, what, a couple miles off Gaza. They've been bringing aid into a part of Gaza that the IDF is very publicly known to not be in. I mean, they're actually down towards Rafah now. They're not in this northern part of Gaza. They're bringing aid in. And now the New York Times had reported this morning, the New York Times, I know, go figure. They've got photo and video of Gazans intercepting the aid, stealing the aid, and then now they're selling it on the black market. So now, guess what? The Biden administration, per the Free Beacon, is going to have to rely on a Hamas-linked organization in order to help with aid. None of this makes sense, does it? They're using that United Nations humanitarian infrastructure. It's the Hamas-linked Relief and Works Agency. Now, that is the entity, remember, in the basement of their entity in Gaza City was a Hamas headquarter, a substation. They had their headquarters in the big hospital there, the Al-Shifa Hospital, but they had like their little substation literally in the UNRWA building in Gaza City. And so now, top U.S. officials confirmed, according to the Free Beacon, that we're relying on them still for aid distribution. So we're giving aid to people who are attacking the people giving the aid, carrying out interceptions, taking the aid, selling it on the black market. And now we're working with an entity that has been proven to be working with the foreign or the hostile power that attacked and carried out a terror attack on our ally. It does not get any more convoluted than this, does it? Now, the Pentagon told the Free Beacon that they're not coordinating them with the UNRWA per se, but they would not answer any questions as to whether or not it isn't funneled through the infrastructure once it makes land in Gaza, which means it is. That's all you need to know. That means it is. It is an absolute disaster. It's a mess. Now, in the meantime, this piece with the ICC, apparently our allies, France, Belgium, have defended the International Criminal Court prosecutor's request for these Israeli warrants. Germany expressed some discomfort, saying that it gave the false impression of equivalence, which it does, because they only name-checked one of the Hamas leaders, and then they said that it's Netanyahu and the defense minister. And they're acting as though it's one and the same, because one defended themselves and the other didn't. That if they're one and the one was the attacker, one, they're one and the same. Slovenia spoke out in favor, saying accountability is crucial. They said France supports the International Criminal Court, its independence, and the fight against impunity and all sanctions. This is the equivalent of a French court trying to prosecute something in the United States. What you have to understand is that the International Criminal Court, the only people that are really can be held accountable, even then it's a stretch, are the people that signed this specific treaty. If you sign this treaty and you are a signatory to it and you are recognizing the ICC, then the ICC, you're granting the ICC's influence over you. But but Gaza has not signed it, and neither has Israel. So this is like, again, it's like a foreign court trying to have some kind of influence in the United States. It's the equivalent to that. That's why this is so damn stupid. It's such garbage theater. It's a way for a bunch of anti-Semites to preen. That's exactly what this is. They had the Belgian Minister of Foreign Affairs say in a statement that they support the work of the ICC. I'm not surprised France would. France is stand now. Good heavens, France isn't even French anymore. They don't even have law and order. I mean, there's just total chaos anymore in France. So, and by the way, remember, here's the direct line, as I was just telling you about the starvation. The prosecutor, Khan, had said that starvation of civilians is a method of warfare. What did I just tell you about the aid? Like, Israel previously gave aid. Now the U.S. has been giving aid, actually with Israel's help, too. And then Gazans have been hijacking it and taking it. When Hamas wasn't doing it, Gazans were. And then they're blaming it on Israel. The UN and other agencies are blaming it on Israel to substantiate these bunk, ridiculous accusations. This is all stupid. I mean, all of these other countries are just getting in line, Belgium and France, to snub an ally nation.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I could go my whole life without actually having to regale you with this headline. A dude apparently had a romantical time in Britain. Actually, it's a store in South Korea, not Britain. It's a British publication. He had a romantical time with a Tesla, a pink Tesla belonging to a lady. CCTV footage caught it. And that's all I'm going to say. Like, just know that the cameras are everywhere. They're always everywhere. I don't even know what that is, but that came up. That is probably something autoplayed. It's probably because the story was so gross. It just made all of our tech go crazy. A man found hidden ancient artifacts in a false ceiling, but some people are pretty angry about this story. Daily Star says that this British guy who found these artifacts, he said that they were, it's like, not, they're not ancient artifacts. I mean, for crying out loud, it's late 1900s, for the love. But it was a retro can of Pepsi and some, like, whatever. It looks like a time capsule. It's not an ancient artifact, though, and I think they just look like they're trash. It just looks like somebody's trash in the ceiling. I think people need to understand time. Let's see this. I don't care about that one. That's dumb. $400 for a pineapple in California. Have you heard about this? So this is, what channel is this? KTLA. So there is a Southern California retailer that is selling a Ruby Glow pineapple for $395. It's pinkish red on the outside, yellow on the inside. They're super expensive pineapples. I didn't even know these existed. There's only like a few thousand that are actually produced a year by Fresh Del Monte, and they sell a whole bunch of produce. But they said that the Ruby Glow pineapple is the result of 15 years of research. It's a, I can't believe this is a phrase, luxury fruit. You know Nancy Pelosi owns one. You know she's had the Ruby Glow pineapple. It's a luxury fruit. So apparently Sumo Citrus, Oishi Strawberries, even, Honeycrisp Apples, I guess, because they are more expensive than like a regular. They're considered luxury fruit. That's self-explanatory, I think, really. A college gave a cat an honorary doctorate. It makes sense because these are all garbage. These are all garbage. It's Vermont State University. They're honoring a cat for his friendliness, so they gave him a doctorate. Max the cat. I don't care. I don't even care. I'm not even a fan of cats. Today's also, by the way, apparently National Strawberries and Cream Day, if you didn't know that. If you were unaware, it is. It's true. Also, consumer spending moving in some new directions. Fast food, though, is not one of them. They said that fast food's still down. A lot of fast food places still, they're noting a lull. Starbucks, McDonald's, etc. Their earnings reports. We have a lot more on the way. Stick with us.
Ready to grow your intellectual Rolodex? Download the Dana Show podcast and join the ranks of those who refuse to settle for the same old boring content on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am still at the point when I walk through the grocery store, people come up to me and grab my hand and say, we're going to be okay, aren't we? He won't win, will he? They won't let him back in the Oval Office, will they? So I do think there is a level of panic out there because some people who look at all the facts and circumstances go, wait a minute, how could this be tied? right? How could this be tied after everything that has occurred?
Because he's like the worst president ever. I actually think Republicans should be concerned that it is tied because it's the worst president ever. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. That's Claire McCaskill. I guess she's like really wringing out that contributor deal at MSNBC. She hasn't been in elected office for a long time. She was the senator until Josh Hawley kicked her out of that seat in Missouri. So I don't know. But I know that they are kind of freaking out because his poll numbers, Biden's poll numbers aren't great. And his fundraising's kind of in the tank, or well, in the toilet, rather. His, for the first time, and I think this actually is very important, the Democrats have never had an issue with fundraising, really. It's and you guys have heard me talk about this a lot. Like, I've been pretty concerned about Republican fundraising because the Republican Party's broke. Their party in a number of different states is, you know, state parties is broke. They don't have a good ground game in a lot of these battleground states. So I've got a lot of concerns. But Democrats, because, you know, it's weird because he's the worst president, I think, in recent memory, Biden. And also the economy is so bad, it's turning people away. But in addition to that, he just isn't inspiring a lot of confidence because he's, you know, old as dust and, you know, got this double standard with litigation, et cetera. But one thing that they've never fallen behind on has been money and fundraising. I mean, they've have so much more in the bank than Republicans do. They've already been strategizing with media buys, et cetera. But however, the April fundraising, those numbers are coming in. And this is the first time that this has happened. Now, when you start getting more than one, then you can kind of, you know, raise your eyebrows. But his fundraising in April, for the first time, fell behind Trump's fundraising. And Trump's fundraising did kick into gear when he started working with the RNC and started doing some big dollar fundraisers. It really came from big dollar fundraisers. The Biden campaign and the DNC raised more than $51 million in April. Now, in March, they raised $90 million. And Trump and the GOP took in $76 million. That's Trump's haul still isn't matching what Biden's was at its most consistent. But for 1 month, it has beaten Biden's. I'm not going to get excited about that or look at anything more into it until there's like 2 and 3 months to consider. It could be because he had just, you know, a bunch of big dollar fundraising. I mean, it could be that. It could, you know, could be several things. But I don't think you need to make a huge shift in your strategy until you have a trend that you can base it on. And part of Biden's downturn, remember, in March, he went on this 8-state campaign swing, and they were trying to make up for his bad polling for the economy, etc. And the less is more wasn't helping him by avoiding the press, so they were trying to offset that, and they started ramping up using some of the Biden war chest to start some of these ad campaigns in these battleground states. Now, they're not going to run out of cash, but what this could be indicative of, and this is why I bring this up, is if you start seeing this, so that was for April, if the numbers come in low for May, and if they come in low for June, that is an absolute measure of an absence of enthusiasm for Biden amongst their most hardcore voters and supporters, because that's where all this money's coming from. And in order for Biden to be competitive, he has to be a fundraiser. And that's where he is very lackluster, to say the least. This could absolutely be measured as a complete absence of enthusiasm for him. Now, don't get super stoked about this yet, because one of the things that Republicans tend to do every damn time is they see one story like this and they're like, let's stop working as hard. Democrats are already falling behind. They did this in 2012. I watched it. Don't do it. And they did it really honestly in 2020. Don't get excited about this stuff. Keep the pedal to the floor until you run through the wall. You got to. So until we see more of this as a pattern, I don't think you need to jump on it either way, but you definitely need to keep it up on your stovetop. Because that's a signal of enthusiasm. And he just, people aren't enthusiasm about him. They're not enthusiastic about him. They don't turn out. He doesn't, people aren't stoked about him. And I don't think it helps a lot for them to have the media up in New York. I think they're second guessing this now and seeing Trump go up there every single day except Wednesday. Although now the defense is done. And so now I guess they're going to go into the jury summations and all this other, all of that for the next week. I don't know. I mean, you got to, in 2016 though, I'm looking at 2016 numbers. Every election is different. In 2016, Hillary Clinton raised more than Trump, but by a bit, but she had Bill Clinton and Barack Obama helping her raise funds. So that makes it a little different. And I mean, she raised a lot more than him. Hers, she had like $770 million to his $430 million. But you know what she also didn't do? She didn't actually go in election year. She didn't go to the state she needed to. Hell, she didn't even go to Wisconsin. I don't think she breezed through the blue wall for Democrats. So that's kind of a problem. At least they're trying to, you know, keep Biden on that. But I don't know. It could be a measure of the lack of enthusiasm for sure. There was an interesting piece I was checking out over break, and I thought this was switching gears here and looking at some foreign policy. I thought this was a very interesting, very provocative piece from Washington Examiner. And this, of course, is, you know, after the International Criminal Court and all of the other stuff with Iran and then Israel, the United Nations General Assembly, they voted earlier this month to advance, because you have what they call the quote unquote Palestinian Authority. That's the umbrella group under which you have these different ruling factions in West Bank and Gaza. And they want quote unquote Palestine to become the UN's 194th member, a fictional state that has never existed ever at all in any point in human history, a fact that is supported by thousands of years of antiquity. And there, you've had Australia and some EU states that have kind of been caving to this. But what this piece, which I think is a very smart piece that Michael Rubin proposes, is that if you're going to propose the recognition of an entity as its own sovereign state, Taiwan has a better case for independence than the non-existent Palestine. And I thought that's a very good point, because there's a huge mistake. There is a betrayal of some of the previous agreements. You know, the Oslo Accords, that was about the formation of that authority in West Bank and Gaza, as so long as they would recognize Israel and they would renounce terrorism, which they never did, right? And then it gets into Yasser Arafat and Bill Clinton's back and forth. He was testing him with terrorism, etc. But that's to grant them such a recognition so soon after they carried out this terrorist attack, as you're encouraging more terrorist attacks. You're showing that you reward terrorism. And this would be a failed state. I mean, any kind of, you know, independent quote unquote Palestine would be a failed state. This piece I thought was good. The chairman, Mahmoud Abbas, is in the 20th year of his 4-year term. He doesn't even bother with the charade of elections. They don't even have to. I will say this. They don't even have to. I mean, the guy who heads up Hamas, they don't have to go. They suspended elections because Fatah was going to get defeated by Hamas anyway in West Bank. So, I mean, yeah, they don't even go through the formality of elections, but do they need to because they're so popular over there? And it's a good, and again, history's not on the side of the modern creation that is quote unquote Palestine. So it's a very, I'm going to put it in your email prep because it's a very good piece. But Taiwan has been independent for hundreds of years as its own sovereign entity. Taiwan's culture is different from China's. Their ethnicity is different from China's. So much that they do and are is so completely different fundamentally from what China is and was that there. I mean, that alone makes an argument for the recognition of it as an independent state. I mean, there was a piece, and this is one of the things that the Examiner notes, is that even Mao acknowledged that Taiwan was a different country. So I don't know why people are pushing the UN to recognize a failed entity already that's based on fantasy, especially when you have, you know, like Taiwan, or for crying out loud. I mean, there's we could sit here and use a number of different of these other sovereign entities. But it's a very interesting piece. We have more to come. I know we're going to get into some Florida Man as well. And I'm going to make sure if you sign up over at Substack to Chapter and Verse that you're going to get a lot of the stuff that we touched on today. We're also going to get into coming up a trans athlete that got booed in Oregon. A trans athlete, and this was one of the stories that was in your prep, that got booed in Oregon. This athlete is not a female athlete, but is a male athlete competing against women. And in Oregon, they booed this guy.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
And by the way, out there, that hat that you keep wearing, that red hat that says Make America Great Again, that tells people that you go along with this. So you might as well just put a swastika on the hat.
Don't do that.
Because we see it anyway.
The bottom line is, this isn't good for any of us. I mean, this is what it comes down to. It's not good for any American. This is not the American way. This is
your
not
way, just because it's not your way, isn't the American way.
She doesn't always get it right, but we know we can fight to make it better. When you have someone who says, I'm going to get rid of all criticism.
I would rather choke to death on all of their extensions, fake eyelashes, silicone, everything else, than have to endure another 30 damn seconds of this endless Henry bitching. Honestly, I cannot stand these broads. It's so annoying. Everything I don't like is Hitler. You got Joy Behar. What's the smartest thing that she's contributed to a conversation besides a fart? Honestly, nothing. Nothing. It's the same damn thing every damn day. It reduces the intelligence quotients of America, of the women who watch that program. It's asinine. Oh, I might as well put a Nazi symbol on a red hat. If you think those two things are even one and the same, you do not have enough brain cells to be on American broadcast. You don't. If you think that those things are even remotely the same thing, you're too stupid for analysis. Please do not punish all of us with your asinine opinions. It's just some of the dumbest commentary I've ever heard. You get these leftists that get up there and they say that same damn crap every single day. Well, it's just like a Nazi. It's just like Hitler. Things that I disagree with are just like Hitler. Things that I don't like aren't the American way. Well, guess what? You not liking it and it still being allowed to exist and be discussed is the American way. Maybe that's a foreign concept to you. Maybe, I don't know, you would rather go to Iran. I mean, it seems like you would like it there better. Maybe Russia. Seems like you'd like it there better. The same media that, what was this piece? They were trying to say that the Trump campaign made a campaign video that had a headline about the Unified Reich. And it wasn't even his campaign that did it. It was just like some rando that they're attributing to his campaign. And they're like, oh, he shared it. There's so much to this that's not, I mean, he didn't make it. They said he posted a video about what's next for America, and they made this ad that said Unified Reich. It was some rando that made it. And then they're saying that he reposted somebody on his social media platform. I don't know. I don't even know. This is all so dumb. It's all so dumb. In the meantime, Hunter Biden. Yeah. That's okay, though. I'm telling you, it's asinine. Now, I wanted to tell you this one last story real quick. This in Oregon, it's in Oregon. This guy won the Oregon Girls 6A 200 meter race by 0.2 seconds. They booed the runner at the finish line, which was, I'm actually surprised that people in Oregon did it because it's kind of left. I know out in the woods it's not, but in urban areas it is. Portland it is. This dude is a male who competes against young women. And he's a sophomore. He smoked his competition because he's got a penis and he's a dude and he's running against chicks. And he finished first place. He just smoked his competition. And as he crossed the finish line, he was booed. And I guess, you know, some of the people were criticizing the parents that were booing. The girls are standing up to defend themselves. The parents are supporting the girls. And you're trying to call the people who are pointing out the absolute unfairness of this. You're trying to say that they're transphobic. You're a misogynist for thinking that you have a right to commandeer girls' sports and run against them and treat it like a damn rec league. Stop. And so, I mean, I'm glad that the female students and the parents are standing up. They're not, they finally have had enough. But it's going to take a lot more than just one or two schools. This is going to keep going. Just wait until fall comes. Just wait, just wait, just gosh, wait till the fall. Then you have sports starting up again. Then you're going to have the elections. I know. All right. We're rolling towards today in stupidity. What do we got, Steve?
All right. Biden was speaking today on, I guess it's something about veterans fundraising today. And this is how he ended his speech. He wanted the last, everybody remember this for the last part of the speech. Here, Juan, let me see if you got it.
Let me close with this. After I signed the PAC Act into law.
Do you remember that piece of legislation?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Just it. Is he going to like actually be able to make it to the debates? Like just somewhat just like sentient? I don't know. It's so bad. Folks, make sure you find us on Facebook, YouTube, like and subscribe. You can also find us over at Substack. Go and sign up for that newsletter. All kinds of good stuff that comes out regularly. And of course, we'll be back with you tomorrow as we gear up towards the Memorial Day weekend. Have a wonderful night.